To be at PI again. I just arrived last week and of course I'm loving it. I'm going to be here for 6 months and I'm mainly working with Lee Smolin, but of course I'm very interested in talking a lot to cosmologists. So please come, get in touch, and I hope to have a lot of interaction. So Lee is going to talk about our work tomorrow. So I thought that for today, I would just talk about work that I've done with Andrew at Edinburgh, at the Royal Observatory. And it's a nice exercise of putting together a group of concepts from cosmology to explain the hemispherical asymmetry. So this is a plot, a slide that I wanted to put across because we've gone through three generations of CMB experiments in 20 years, and the resolutions also increased a lot, of course, for Planck. It's very high, particularly for HFI, and the difference in maps is increased so much also in only two decades that I think it's always good to sort of pat ourselves on the back that we must be doing something right in order to get three experiments funded and ongoing in two decades. So the problem, there are several anomalies with the CMB multipoles and the data treatment. And I'm going to talk about the asymmetry of power along a particular direction in the hemisphere. Basically, what we observe is that the temperature fluctuations are slightly higher in one hemisphere towards the other. So the talk is basically just going to be the meaning of observations, some background. How can you generate the anomaly spectrum? What does it have to do with open inflation? And finally, talk about the spectrum for open universes and the anomaly. So the surprise earlier last year was that Planck observed the same type of anomalies that WMAP had observed. And it was a surprise for many people because I think the field had an idea that the spectrum could be, these anomalies could be due to some statistical systematic uncertainties or problems with the WMAP analysis. And Planck saw the exact same anomaly at a similar uncertainty, so at a similar three sigma level, and notice that it extends to lower multiples. So it's not only present in the large multiples. And they model the asymmetry like this. So this is the temperature anisotropy spectrum. This is close to isotropy. And A is the value of the amplitude of the difference of the power. P is the direction of the maximum direction of the difference in temperature, and it's just any value in the sky, any vector in the sky. So that's how you can model the anomaly. And of course, all the work is going to be in explaining that, A, what are the bounds in that asymmetry and how you can get that. So basically, this is if you want to understand the asymmetry, you can say that density of matter and radiation varies more strongly on one hemisphere than the other. Of course, this is not true for the CMB, but it would be true for today. The statistical significance is under debate. This could be a look elsewhere effect. Can we perform so many tests on the CMB that we are bound to get some anomalies, some just statistical flukes. And I like, I particularly like this quote from Fred Menger, which basically says, for a system as rich in statistics as the CMB, we basically can find in it, performing the tests that we choose, we can find in it a lot of... I think he was a statistician. This is a famous, did you hear this quote before?
No, I'm just wondering.
So I think I've heard this quote first on a meeting that brought cosmologists together, well, Bayesian statisticians together with frequentists. And so it was cosmologists together with statisticians. And so this is, seems to be very common in statistics. So if it's just a fluctuation, a statistical fluctuation, we're stuck with that. We're not going to get a better measurement on that. If it's real, if it's really a feature of the CMB anisotropies, then it's very relevant for the early universe and how you infer information on inflation, because it will regard cosmological scales that are outside of the horizon right now. So if you're a theorist and you want to look at this asymmetry, you have the challenge to generate, the perturbations need to be stronger on one hemisphere than on the other, but the mean temperature is very well constrained to sub-percent level. And so you need to retain the Gaussian distribution to better than one in 10 to the 4 at any angular scale. So what's the usual, of course, the asymmetry was not discovered by Planck. There's work before Planck. It was first detected in the first year of WMAP already. And so a colleague of yours, Adrian Erichek, basically, I'll talk about it later better, but they said that we could explain the asymmetry by considering a very long modulation wave mode, much larger than our horizon today. And these are the quantum fluctuations of inflation that we observe at all scales. And then you modulate this small scale fluctuation from the usual inflation with a long wavelength mode. So the key point is that this mode is super horizon today, and it can generate the power symmetry. So the usual mechanism for inflation is, of course, you've got some potential via phi. The perturbations become classical as the scales leave the horizon. You have some parameters of that potential that will give you a spectrum very close to scale invariance. And you could say, all right, so I've got scales leaving the horizon. The largest scales that leave the horizon are the scales that we observe today, the largest multiples. And the potential varies with the field phi, and in particular, the amplitude of the power spectrum is proportional to V over epsilon. As you know, it fixes the energy scale of inflation. So we could think that before the larger scales that we observe today, there was a mode leaving the horizon that had this particular length, so a very large super horizon mode, and that could be generated by the same field. So it's just a mode larger than the largest scales that we observe today. So what could generate this long wavelength mode? It could be a scale of curvature. Particularly if you've got negative curvature, so you have a settled geometry, the impact on the horizon scales that it would have today is exactly, we observe one hemisphere to be larger, hotter than the other. just like that.
And so a scale of curvature postulating this is, of course, very challenging because Planck and together with other data sets measure flatness to the sub-percent level. And but the co-moving curvature scale is given by, of course, the flatness. But it means that the radius of curvature can be 10 times bigger than the Hubble radius. And this is only 3 times the size of our observable universe today. So it's possible that it's not as flat as we sometimes are led to think because omega is so close to 1. So you could potentially have effects of this order of the curvature radius on our horizon today. So how are we going to generate this curvature? This is the bit that explains how the long wavelength mode can arise. So you are going to use a bubble. You're going to use open inflation, so a nucleation from a first order phase transition. And before the generation of the inflation perturbations today, the universe tunneled from a high energy to a false, from a high energy false vacuum to a true energy false vacuum. This creates a region in the bubble of underdensity, and it mimics a saddle geometry. Of course, this is generated by the Coleman-DeLucia instanton, and these models were very famous in the 1990s. I've just recently heard Neil give a talk on the fact that a Coleman-DeLucia nucleation is not possible, and I'm very interested about that result. I hope to talk to him more about it. But nevertheless, this is the standard picture, so it's what we're going to use here. I'm not sure if I need to say this right now, but the models that were considered on open inflation in the 90s were essentially not one field models, but two field models, and I'm going to explain later why. Okay, so yeah, so the vacuum switches and the bubble wall expands at the speed of light once it's created. So this is just a picture that was created for the press about our paper, but it's just saying that once you nucleate, you are, of course, in a hypersurface, which is infinite, and it's it's got a curvature. And it lives inside the larger meta-universe. So the quantum tunneling will induce fluctuations in the bubble wall. And the bubble wall fluctuation gets imprinted on the modes that are leaving the horizon at that time. And of course, the question is, how do we propagate the quantum fluctuations in the field in the false vacuum? How do those correspond to fluctuations in the true vacuum? How do you make that matching? And there was a Japanese team just also in the 90s, because the open inflation models were so popular, computed what would happen if you got a nucleation from a larger vacuum into the true vacuum, and then in the true vacuum, inflation occurs. So this is basically what happens, and this is just an analogy with the spectrum that you know from the hydrogen atom. So if in the bound states of the hydrogen atom, you've got just a few modes, and once the spectrum becomes, once the electron becomes free, then you've got a continuum of modes. And this is just a pictorial to explain that this is the same that happens when you tunnel from, when you do quantum tunnel from a higher inflation. Yeah, I know I shouldn't put this picture. But no, there's no tunneling in the hydrogen atom. It's just to, so what you get in the spectrum, in the resultant spectrum in the CMB, you get a continuum form, continuum wave modes, a spectrum of wave modes, which is the, our usual inflation generated. And then on top of that, you get one single mode, which is supercurvature. Of course, there's nothing to do with supercurvature in the hydrogen atom. Sorry. It's just to explain it a bit better.
Do you think there are some quantum fluctuations before the tunneling, before the nucleation?
Yes.
That are implemented
in, yeah, yeah. Fluctuations on the
from the surrounding space. Also, I think there would be a whole series of things.
The surrounding space outside, yeah, after nucleation,
sure.
After
at the time you're going to want to do the instanton plus the first quantum
recognition. Uh huh. Yeah.
But then also, well, with the false vacuum outside, you're going to have fluctuations.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess I'm not sure whether you're just pinging up one mode.
So this calculation, I'm going to show it later on, takes into account the bubble, the wall, and outside the bubble, and there are different regimes. So you include the okay. It's a horrid formula. You're not going to understand it, but just the type that. It's a type of calculation that only the Japanese can do, I think. So.
Or in the sense you're just doing fluctuations in the scalar, not in the field, rather than.
Just a scalar. This is, of course, there are fluctuations in the bubble wall coming from that induce gravitational waves, and but this is, we're just going to treat the scalar contribution to the temperature.
In other words, the fluctuations in the wall are going to be more like the sort of driving terms of fluctuations in the scalar.
Yes, yeah. I'm not sure. I think the wall, you need to have bubble wall collisions to generate gravitational waves as well, right?
Well, you could imagine the wall fluctuating, but then you might expect, you know, if the wall itself has a movement that would then generate fluctuations.
Yeah. That's true. This they computed for the scalars, and I'm not sure if you would have an effect on the gravitational waves, which I think you would, but it's not different from any other open inflation tunneling scenarios. First order. Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, sorry. No. Okay. The inflation has graceful exit problem as well, but it happens after nucleation. So these models were, today they correspond to the internal inflation models, where you've got a period of internal inflation with bubble nucleation, and then you have our usual inflation generating the power spectrum of perturbations. So if you think about the work of like Leonard Susskind or Raphael Busso, that's the type of framework that they have as well. There's a tunneling from the first order transition, and then you got your normal inflation scenario. So this would be. They were very keen on these models in the 80s, in the 90s. So they computed this to high order. So basically, this is just a pictorial. And I see that Kendrick has just arrived, so I need to be very careful now with my maps. So don't get offended. This is just a pictorial superposition of what's happening. So you're adding a dipole long wavelength modulation to your usual isotropic CMB. And so here are the computations for how they propagated the perturbations across the bubble wall. Of course, it's Misao Sasaki and Yamamoto and Tanaka, and they're super smart. And they came up with a spectrum of subcurvature modes. So the scale at which the tunneling happens sets the curvature scale. The spectrum of modes beneath that subcurvature is, of course, our continuum, and the wave modes are positive. Of course, we're not interested in this one. We are interested in the supercurvature mode. And for that, you've got an imaginary wave mode, and which includes this scale here. And what happens during tunnel is you excite a single wave mode, lambda, and with these spherical harmonics, you then can get what the resulting power spectrum is. So you have a tunneling happen. It happens at some mode of wavelength k is leaving the horizon. That mode is going to generate a supercurvature fluctuation. And after that, the modes that are smaller than that supercurvature modes are going to be continuum. So the modes that leave after the nucleation is just going to reproduce your standard inflation spectrum. That's the open universe, the open inflation picture. Yeah, you have a continuum there, yes. But when you tunnel, then that continuum transforms into a single supercurvature mode, and the modes then beneath that, shorter than that, just continue as quantum fluctuations.
What is a single mode?
Yeah, why did it happen?
I don't know. They write it here as continuum, but they argue later in the paper that there's only one mode. And I think that you get a single mode per nucleation, so the wavelength of the mode relates to the scales that are leaving the horizon. My impression from reading the paper is that there is just one mode excited supercurvature. Maybe you've got not a continuum, but discrete, even larger curvature modes. I could imagine that, but I'm quite sure that it's not a continuum of modes. Maybe I didn't show the precise part of the paper. But those are the conclusions.
The transition happens when you have a finite volume, but here you don't have a finite volume of any sort.
Well,
You mean in the global patch of the system?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose. But if you go, if you're in a flat patch, flat foliation of the system, there's no point. So I mean, okay. So maybe that's.
Well, you can trace it back. I mean, that has to be that. So.
Right. Okay. But I don't think here there is any talk about the size of the global false vacuum. But I mean, okay. So maybe you should go ahead.
Yeah. So
what? So is lambda going to be greater than one or less than one?
Lambda is going to be greater than one, but the wave mode is going to be imaginary.
Okay, which means the space like one.
Oh, greater than one, sorry. No, lambda p needs to be smaller than one for the supercurvature modes. P squared needs to be.
Sorry, I thought p was imaginary.
The w- so the k, the k corresponding to the supercurvature mode needs to be smaller than one in terms of the curvature radius. So the k that we are normally thinking about in cosmology. So this, the lambda here, I don't know. I think you just have p to be imaginary and lambda is given by a positive value, of course.
Okay, so I was just worried, well, A is this the space-like momentum that you're talking about, and B is this thing blowing up at one.
A.
Sorry, A and B are you talking
about? No, 2 points.
Okay,
so point,
I'm gonna skip this. This. Okay, guys, you can go and study this paper. it's got like about 40 pages. So, but they do. I think maybe I should have included also the part that where they describe that lambda is only there's only the excitation of a supercurvature mode. But this is not the important part of the talk. So. So the important part, of course, that we want for the asymmetry is how much does this supercurvature mode excite, contribute to the power spectrum. And basically, what they come up with, so the takeaway lesson is that the power spectrum is going to be amplified by a ratio of the energy densities in the vacuum, so the difference of energy densities in the vacuum, and you will get a contribution or an amplification to the usual continuum spectrum by the spectrum of fluctuations due to the long wavelength. So you've got these parameters of the tunneling entering directly in the generation of the long wavelength mode. So now we know what we want and how we get it, but we need to build the model. And so we need a tunneling area followed by an almost flat area to give us our usual inflation scenario. And Linde and Meslumian also in the 90s, argued that this is, of course, very severely fine-tuned if you only have one field. So they take the Linde-Meslumian model, takes two fields. One gives perturbations, and the other one tunnels. So you could think that we are done. We can take psi to be the false vacuum. The inflation gets long wavelength mode when it tunnels the inflaton, and then just gives undergoes regular inflation, slow roll, and produces the continuum spectrum. But again, it can be shown that if you have the same field, both contributing the long wavelength mode and the continuum spectrum, this is going to give a large contribution to the octopole. And this is, again, a result from Eric Cech, Kaminkowski, and Carroll that proposed this scenario in the first place. Basically, what you do is you expand the field across the horizon. So you make a delta phi, capital delta phi. You relate that to the gravitational potential, and from the gravitational potential you can obtain each multiple, and they use the strongest constraint comes from the octopole. So you cannot generate an asymmetry compatible with data if you've got just one field. So we need one more field. Now we have three, and phi is going to be, again, the false vacuum. The second field is going to be give the supercurvature mode and the continuum spectrum, and I'll explain why. And then phi is just going to give the usual inflation. So the field that can do this is, of course, the curvaton, and many people here have also worked on this. And basically, the supercurvature mode leaves the horizon during tunneling. It's outside the horizon during the standard inflation, and generates in which it acquires the continuum. And how can it then imprint the long modulation on the spectrum of inflation once it comes back into the horizon? So the scenario is that inflation happens and it's got some spectrum, which we don't really care. After that, the inflaton starts to oscillate, inflation ends, it reheats and gives radiation. And much later, or you can tune this in the model, once the Hubble scale becomes of order of the mass of the field of the curvaton, the curvaton oscillates, decays too, and imparts its fluctuations, so the continuum and the supercurvature onto the radiation that came from the inflaton. And I think most people just consider the potential for the curvaton to be quadratic. I can say more about that. So I always like to look at these energy density plots because it explains to us better what's going on in the curvaton scenario. So this is an old scenario. It does not have to do with the asymmetry in particular, but we can use it for the asymmetry. So you have, of course, your inflaton setting the energy scale of inflation. You've got a very light field here. Inflation ends at this scale, starts to oscillate, and actually here there's no oscillation. It's prompt reheating and behaves like radiation. And later, the lighter curvaton field starts to undergo oscillations. And of course, the oscillations go as matter for the quadratic potential. And so they surface over the radiation from the inflaton there, and whatever fluctuations the curvaton has acquired during horizon exit are then going to be propagated or imparted on the fluctuations of radiation, and eventually then the curvaton also decays and behaves like radiation. So you get your standard scenario. The bottom line, why these models are very interesting is that, well, I don't know if they're interesting, but people say they're interesting. So the curvaton gives the freedom for the inflaton to have any potential that you want, as long as it's got energy density and as long as it's giving you accelerated expansion. So from the underlying particle physics model, if you for some reason cannot find a very small tilted potential, you can just say the inflaton's got a red completely tilted potential, but the curvaton, we just need the curvaton, a very light field that is undergoing slow roll. I'm not sure why is this alleviating any problems for the fine tuning, because of course the curvaton still needs to have slow roll, but it should, maybe it does. I just don't understand. Good. So now we are going to connect all these parameters to the asymmetry. So we've got
the false vacuum, the true vacuum, got a mass of the vacuum, and we want to constrain also this guy, the wave mode of the long fluctuation. And so what in that paper by the Japanese group, they conclude that the amplitude of the power spectrum is enhanced by the ratio of the vacua, and the wave number that you get is related to the mass of the vacua over its energy. And we're going to use this wave number given there to connect to the amplitudes of the CMB asymmetry. So the strongest constraints that are going to be applied and limit the what we want to get out of the model is, of course, non-Gaussianity. And again, Kendrick, this is pictorial. So, but you can imagine if you mix a dipole of some larger amplitude with a Gaussian map, you may get FNL contributions. So this was studied by David Leith earlier, just after the Planck results, and he relates the amplitudes of the asymmetry that you can get with the scale of the long wavelength mode compared to the distance to the last scattering surface, and together with the power spectrum generated by that mode. And then we just, because we are working in slightly curved universe, we just transform this flat universe result and put it here with our scale for the curvature. And of course, this is the translation, the distance like scattering is given by that. This you've seen already. And so this mode here, the power spectrum can be identified by, it's the mode that a delta function with just one perturbation would excite. So that's the coefficient of those of this delta function fluctuation. Then apart from the FNL and independently, we have another constraint. And this is again on this time on the quadrupole. And this comes from the Grishuk-Zaldovich effect, which is basically, again, it was studied in the 90s because they wanted to look at open universes. The Grishuk-Zaldovich is basically the contribution on your spectrum that will come from a very super horizon wavelength. So that's they estimated what would be the maximum contribution, and it's for the quadrupole. It's actually interesting because if your universe is flat, then only the quadrupole gets a contribution. But if your universe is slightly curved, then there's a range of low multiples that get a contribution, which is basically what Planck has seen. You have up to L of, I think, 60 at least. You have a contribution to the asymmetry. So we've got this constraint here from the quadrupole, from the Grishuk-Zaldovich effect. And we know these quantities here relate to the asymmetry in the FNL that we've seen before. And so we can use this limit to make this relationship on the amplitude of the asymmetry, the magnitude of your FNL generated, and the deviations from flatness there. So we're starting to constrain the model. We can see here that these two are going to be in stress. We could, it looks like we could generate an arbitrarily large A with in the flat case because of this dependence of curvature,
But it's not true, because we also need to say that k curvature is smaller than one, and this is the answer that, that you were asking before. And of course, we need to keep our perturbation, the spectrum perturbation also needs to be smaller than one. So omega curvature cannot be completely flat. It needs to be larger than that. And if you saturate the bound from the quadrupole, this is the maximum that you can obtain on the amplitude of the asymmetry for a given FNL. So it looks like good news. So A is about 0.7, and if FNL is, say, about order 10, which is already 2 sigma with the data, but all right, then you can get this scenario to work. And so there's a nice catch that I like about this model, is because we always thought that you will never be able to probe anything that happened before inflation. It erases all memory, it stretches scales. But with this type of signature, we could, if the asymmetry is there in the CMB, we could potentially be looking at signatures from the pre-inflationary epoch, and namely, of course, as the eternal inflation crowd likes to study, which vacuum did we come from?
So, question. So that's usually the idea if inflation lasts long enough, you're right, remember.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. So you can say, of course, if inflation lasts 200 e-folds in this model, probably you wouldn't see.
But there is no mention of e-folding inflation, so I don't know how that happens.
When the curvature, supercurvature scale leaves the horizon, that says what. How many e-folds there was, because k is gives you the amount of e-folds before the ending of inflation. So in order for them to fit the continuum spectrum, you say just after tunneling we are at, I don't know, 60 e-foldings of inflation.
The minimal number of e-folding.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay. Just this is for all inflation models. You always need to say. Which e-folding, how many e-foldings does it have? And if it's got 100 e-foldings, you say the largest scales left 100 e-foldings before.
So then you agree that the old picture is still correct, that if inflation doesn't last much longer than 60 e-folding, then of course you see the initial condition, but the very first, because.
I suppose so. This is, however, a way to see directly in the CMB multiples. If it's a supercurvature mode that just left, it's about 3 orders, the 3 times the horizon. So I found that very neat. So what would the model tell you? It tells you the ratio of the vacuum of our parent vacuum. Of course, we got this is the power spectrum. We've got this constraint of the amplitude of fluctuations. So you can constrain the curvature of the vacuum with the value of the true vacuum together with curvature there. And so you get this relationship, which has all parameters of the vacuum. So I think that's actually going to be it for now. So the work is, or I found it interesting because there was no motivation for what generates the long wavelength super horizon mode. The curvaton, of course, just in other existing scenarios, can give the fluctuations, and particularly gets a long wavelength with an open universe. And we can match the CMB asymmetry. And the resulting universe is also consistent with the Gaussian limits, which is just about consistent, but that's interesting. Oh, and this is
So we got quite a bit of attention in this for this paper. And the only reason I can see is that so Mark Kalminkowski wrote APS highlight, and he made a very nice article. And of course, the reporters then looked at it and said, well, the universe is not flat, it's curved. And after that, this became a very, very mediatic. And I was in, luckily, I was away. I was not even on internet reach. but Andrew was answering questions of reporters every day and being emailed and interviewed. So be careful when you write a paper, because you never know what the reporters are going to pick up. Or if you like, of course, if you like to talk to reporters, that's, you don't need to worry at all. Okay, I think that's it. Yes.
So if you understood this correctly, so there are two things. First, there is a first order equation. Mm-hmm. Then there is a second order ordinary equation. Slow roll. So there are two
things. Slow roll is not a second order phase transition.
No, slow roll is a second order phase transition. Everything is continuous. You don't change anything abruptly.
You mean without breaking symmetry? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, when your field is rolling down.
Yes. You have a slow roll. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but okay. So the question now is that do you continue within one bubble or do you have a lot of bubbles?
No, just one bubble.
No. Because I was going to ask, if you have a lot of bubbles, then when you collide two bubbles, you're going to make domain walls with a boundary and then you have to worry about it.
Yeah. Yes. Although those scenarios are still viable. Scenarios where the spectrum of fluctuations is generated inside the false vacuum, and then the false vacuum starts to nucleate bubbles, and the rate of bubble nucleation starts to increase, and all bubbles percolate, and it's from that percolation that you get our universe right now. So you can. That's a different first-order inflation scenario, but it's still viable, with even with the collisions of the bubble walls and gravitational waves producted.
So I have a comment and a question. I suppose the comment is that I want to say that the claim detection of power symmetry.
Yeah.
I think you'll find like two camps of observers, those that do and do not think it's
yeah.
I'm in the second camp, but I don't think it's significant.
It would be very interesting if you could say something about it, because so yesterday Kendrick and I have had a discussion, and I was actually looking at the references later on, and they are indeed, since the WMAP years, they are indeed all coming from the same team, like you said.
This isn't meant as like a criticism or anything. I mean, I think the more balanced perspective is that there's controversy, and in the meantime, it's reasonable for theorists to explore the possibility of the modulation.
Yeah.
But just want to put that out there. secondly, I was wondering about the L dependence, how the modulation, if I say filter the modes of CMD to a given range of angular scales, will I see that the power asymmetry?
That's a good question. I think for this model, what Planck sees is basically A. He doesn't see A of K. But as you know, we need A of K because Chris Arata has come up with limits on the same hemispherical asymmetry from large-scale structure in quasars. So the model that will fit both CMB and large-scale structure will need to have a A of K, so the K-dependent amplitude.
Oh, yes, I think in CMB that would be necessary. A would play no sound at all scales. It would be like 30 sigma effect of pong. I don't think anyone's been in that.
So it's beyond enough therapy, is it, it dies?
There are, you know, a range of claims in the literature. I would say it's not there in any scale, but everyone's claimed. And so it depends on which paper you read. But I don't know if anyone would claim
that. But it's, yeah,
that would just be way too large.
I mean, that would be the, it should be a scale dependent even at the CMB.
Even at the CMB. They don't quote it with AFK, but I suppose they just are talking about the dipole modulation, and they say for this multiple, you've got this A. You can also see it like that. Another thing that I would like to say is that you're very right. So during the entire WMAP results, there was never a lot of attention from the community, from the theorists community, onto generating this phenomenologically. And I think after Planck saw the same thing, people started to take it more seriously. More mainstream theorists started to take it more seriously. But it is very interesting that it's always the same group that sees, since WMAP first, it's always the same group. And as you say, you've made the analysis as well, and you didn't find any asymmetry, right? Or you couldn't confirm.
I mean, WMAP, I did the analysis. You just didn't see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was on 3 sigma. I mean, I think it's probably somewhere between 3 sigma and that.
We quoted a p-value of about 10%.
Is that right?
Yeah. When you account for all the look elsewhere effects, there's a choice of what scale to look at.
Yeah.
I mean, if you fix this a posteriori scale, there are choices of scale where it's, say, 2%.
Yeah.
If you float it,
so that really is interesting, and I think there's not a lot of awareness in the theorists community that's so refutable like that. And particularly because the same group put out a paper last Friday where they make simulations of Planck data and make simulations of WMAP 9, I think, and they find for 1,000 simulations of WMAP data, they find 5 models that could have this asymmetry, and for 1,000 simulations of Planck, they find no model with this asymmetry. So just to see if it's a statistical fluctuation, but again, so that paper is again taken by the community to be okay. It's really there, better than the Planck paper demonstrated. Gorski, Erikson, Van Day.
This needs to get sorted out. I mean, it's a puzzle because when one group of people runs the analysis, they always find it. When another group of people just more codes up more or less the same thing. You know, I did it, but we just don't see it.
Yeah.
And I think the only way this is going to get straightened out is by some sort of code exchange.
WMAP on some scales, okay, there's look elsewhere effects. So now if you can go to smaller scales in Planck, the WMAP can't see, there's no more look elsewhere effect. There's a sort of a prediction that you will see this asymmetry, right? So that's a cleaner test. Has that test been done or something like that?
Well, I would, my take on that is that if you look at the Planck papers, there are 3 analyses that look for this effect, although only one of them is explicitly called a dipole modulation. There's also the tau anomaly analysis, which is not exactly the same thing.
Which analysis?
There's
the tau anomaly
non-Gaussian parameter tau anomaly, which is not a dipole modulation, but a modulation which is controlled by scale invariant Gaussian field. But that there's a sense in which you can define a correlation coefficient between the two signals, like a correlation coefficient that corresponds to observation.
So it's one Gaussian random field which modulates the other one?
Exactly. Yeah. And anyway,
so
this
is just one mode, a dipole which modulates.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Depends on whether the modulation field is scale invariant or just power equals one. Anyway, those two signals are 90% correlated, so it's one of them can't be larger than the other one being there. The plot Kalman analysis finds consistency with 0. Another analysis. analysis that includes a dipole modulation on the nodes is the analysis of the second order Doppler effect. The first order Doppler effect just generates a dipole out of the molecule, but the second order, it does several things, including modulation of power on all scales. The various effects are separated out in the second order Doppler paper, and the dipole modulation analysis shows no signal. Internally within Planck, there's not really agreement on whether it's there.
Because of the authors of these two other papers.
Well, I prefer not to make it sociological.
I mean, no. But it is.
This thing's can sort it out. I mean, right now, I think.
I think it would be very interesting to put out something that, but of course, somebody would need to make, somebody inside Planck would need to estimate the asymmetry, like you said, that you've tried to do for WMAP and you couldn't find it.
It's just really, it might be interesting that I've seen that was another area of a trialogue paper where you just have people come together and have a discussion of what we think is going on.
I think my personal guess is that someone just has a bug. It's more or less the same analysis.
Going to be hard to straighten out with some sort of like code exchange between the two camps. That's probably the best.
Their code is available, right? Commenter and Smika and all the. Not for this. Okay. Okay. Well, it's great to have Kendrick tell us a bit about symmetry.